He knew what was coming. He's definitely on the inside.
That's a storyline you can tell. There are millions of people out there that vibe with that story and go, wow, this is my guy.
I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year.
And his life changed after the Netflix series. Yeah, well, good morning, everybody. Exciting for us to have Dylan Fertilli here with us this morning for the second time. I don't know if Dylan knows this, but it's still one of our most watched videos.
Hey.
Dylan, so thank you very much. I don't know if it was the crotch last time.
Yeah, it could have been the crotch.
Low angle camera.
It's the crotch shot that maybe got us that views. But Dylan, what an honor for you to be back, and thank you very much for your time this morning. But
we'll pop it up now on the screen just so that everyone knows what we were talking about.
I was very relaxed, I remember.
A flashback there. But Dylan, welcome, and thank you very much for taking the time again to be with us. Thank you.
No worries. I'm looking forward to some paddle yesterday. That's how Arthur enticed me. So
yeah, I heard so.
With Dylan, you've got to bribe him and like pull him into something. Like if I said to him, let's do a podcast, he'd be like,
is it surfing, paddle, or gaming?
Legos. We're not building Legos.
Lego or gaming. Some gaming, maybe.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. We're going to play some paddle just now afterwards and see what happens on the paddle court.
Yeah.
But let's just take a moment, Dylan. Pickleball is big for you.
Yeah.
What do you find the difference? Because paddleball is now associated with almost every golf club.
Yeah, in South Africa, paddle's the thing. People don't even know about pickleball, but in America, pickleball is, I mean, they claim it to be the fastest growing sport. Don't know if that's true or not, but self-marketing always helps.
Helps, yeah.
It's just a fun game. I used to play a lot of tennis, so played with Sergio. A buddy of mine's actually trying to play against Sergio now, and he's like, how good is he? And he beat me 6-3, 6-4. So when that happened, I tried to work on my tennis when I was back in Austin. Would play a lot, and shoulder, knee, hip, kind of be sore the next day and take an hour warm-up before golf. So I just thought, it's not the best thing for my body. So I looked at pickleball, played a little bit. I'm like, okay, this is a little easier. Obviously, if you're not playing at a high level, it's not going to take a huge toll on the body. So that was my main attraction to it. And then it just kind of becomes like an addiction, just like everyone in South Africa has seen with padel. It's so much fun, and I've actually got a friend, Thomas Wilson. He's one of the best players in the world. He just won yesterday in Minnesota, won mixed doubles and doubles. So if I can hang out with him and watch his rise to fame, I can certainly maybe do the same on the amateur side.
Yeah, the amateur side. But I mean, yeah, it's going to be more about egos this morning, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think Dylan beat me in tennis a couple of Decembers ago, but not from skill. He's just like... He's smart at what he does because he knows he's a lot fitter than I am.
Yeah.
So he just, you know, played around with me to get me tired.
Kept
and then,
it in play.
Yeah.
That's my whole game. That's pickleball 101, actually. Just keep the ball in play and keep getting it back, and the other guy gets tired or loses his mind, you end up winning.
But next December, I'm actually going to do some fitness and actually swim on the tennis court.
Okay.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. It's first baby year, man.
Yeah, I need to just get through the first baby, yeah.
Okay, well, Dylan, tell us a little bit about last time we saw you, which was roughly now just over 12 months ago.
Yeah.
We obviously know you came in for Glendower this time to come around you, but you also had the Bahrain Championships that you just won.
Yeah.
But give us a bit of an update from the last time we saw you.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster since I last saw you guys. I played poorly in America. I had a good finish at Waste Management early on in February, March, and then picked up a little lower back something. I didn't even know what it was, and a bit of pain. It would go away for a week, come back, and then finally worked with a physio in the end of the year, like October, November, figured it out. So I basically played 6 or 7 months with not my A game, not my B game, just trying to piece it together. And all of a sudden I was outside 125 on the FedEx Cup list, and I was chasing and playing more tournaments and just trying to get through and keep a card for the next year. And at the end of the year I was 170 on the FedEx list. So it was a tricky year and not a great way to lead into the following year, but thankfully the tour, with their negotiations with the DP World Tour, had Category 12 on the DP World Tour, which I was able to use at the end of the year in November. Played here in South Africa, 2-3 events, 4 events maybe, and then started the year in the Middle East and somehow got into Dubai Desert Classic, a few of the other Middle East events, and won Bahrain. So that commitment to come back here and play DP World Tour and play some of those tougher events where a lot of Americans who have the same opportunities kind of stayed there and didn't come. I just thought it was validity to my choice to come back and work hard and spend some time in South Africa and get my game back on track, basically.
Well, that's good, because I mean, if I could talk about it, there was even a low point on one of your Instagram posts that you thought you wanted to give up golf at some stage.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily to give up golf. It was more just, do I want to do this anymore? Do I want to try something else, either short term, long term, and just find a way to re-energize the golf stuff? But I reached out to a few mentors and people that I care about or care about their opinions, and they just said, look, you got to figure it out. You either have to do this and go for it 100% or take the time off and then go and do something else. But in my mind, I was like, as soon as I basically figured out this injury thing, yeah, once I felt healthy and my body was moving well, it became so much easier. Everything became clearer and I was able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to say.
Yeah, because if you're not in a good health, you know, whether it's in business or in sport, it becomes, you know, it's almost like depression you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm...
No, for sure. I mean, at some point I thought, oh, am I depressed? I don't even know. Like, never had any issues with that. So I reached out to some people and spoke to a doctor, and they were just, my doctor first said, no, you're fine, Dole. Then I was like, let's get a second opinion. Spoke to a psychologist. He was like, nope, you're fine as well. You're just not achieving. Yeah, you're not achieving what you're used to, and maybe it's tougher. Every day's tougher. But yeah, it was scary for me to think about that. And I know a lot of people have way more serious mental issues, and I don't know, to be lost and not have anybody is pretty scary. I was lucky to have a group of people around me that could help out. I do like to take a lot of my own career like on myself and make all those decisions, but I've realized again through this that, hey, you got to delegate, you got to get other people to help you out.
Yeah.
What was your plan B like?
Plan B, play pickleball maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely an interesting proposition, and I know I could be good at it, but I'm 5 years behind the curve now. There are too many good players in the States. No, business. I've always wanted to go into some other angle of business, but nothing really has popped up. So I've got some properties in Austin that I take care of, but yeah, I'm still, I mean, commentary I could do as well.
Yeah.
PJ Tour Live guys want me to come and do more stuff with them, but that can wait. I can still do that when I'm 60 or 70 years old, hopefully.
Well, actually, it's a good topic there to go into that. And I know that you like to go into these topics, and we touched on it for about 10 minutes in the last podcast, but the Tour, Live, PGA, Merge, the announcement, everybody now knows the Full Swing second series is just starting to come out. Some incredible insight into the back end. But just tell us a little bit about that, because one of the things I want to talk about there is Rory dedicating his entire life to sticking up for the PGA Tour, you know, discrediting the Live Tour and all the players that went to it, very critical on his thing. And all of a sudden, he finds out by the media that there's a merge, and he thought he was very close to Jay on the inside information.
Well, if you follow some timelines there was stuff that came up in the, was it congressional hearing, I guess, that someone was interviewed, and he was copied on text messages before that announcement. So,
oh, was he?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. It may not have made mainstream media, but some people did the timeline and were like, he knew what was coming. He's definitely on the inside. I mean, that's not a, spoiler. No, this stuff has been known for a while now. You got to understand, it's a multi-billion dollar company. It's a big industry. So there's going to be tons of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we as players on the tour, we don't even know about. Even, I mean, Rory probably doesn't know about some things as well, but he's definitely more in the know than someone like me.
Yes. But I mean, it just talk us a little bit in, because I mean, his golf took a major dip, and I'm not, you know, to talk about Rory's perspective, but what was that like for you guys in the back end? Because there was meetings had. I mean, was it quite a pissed off moment?
That was actually distracting for me last year as well. Yeah. I add that to one of the reasons why I played poorly, because we're sitting there going like, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year. Like, the tour could just decide to only have 50 players and kick everyone else out. Like, I need to push now and get in the top 50 because that's all they seem to care about.
Yeah.
And that was also kind of stressful. Yeah, I was like, who knows what's going on? We don't know. Then it's like, okay, we should push back. We should kind of aggregate together and try and push back against the top 20, 30, 50 players. But as a sort of 50 to 150 guy, we just realized there's nothing we can do. We just got to sit here and take it, and that's the way it's going to be. I think that's how it works in big business, in governments, in any kind of organization. You see, if those people that have the power or claim to have the power make decisions and don't take everyone into account, then we'll play with the scraps, I guess, whatever scraps they send us.
And is that a little bit of how you guys genuinely feel?
That's the view. I mean, anyone outside the top 50, I think if you ask them, I've chatted to many guys, and that's surely the general feeling. It's sad, oh no, we can't do anything here. They've kind of made it clear who they care about, who they want to give money to and channel money to and who they value. But for me, the crazy thing is, if you market those 30 people over 10, 15 years, they become famous. They make money. Sure, they're always in the top 50, 60, 70, but they're not always in the top 30 or the top 50. Now, all of a sudden you go, oh, we want to reward those that are the most famous. Yeah, but you're the one that's done the marketing. You're the one that's chosen who you're going to market. Those guys are going to be the famous ones. Like, unless you do an equitable system of marketing everyone fairly, whether you're a 100 ranked player for 5 years and then you dip into the top 20, when you're in the top 20, you should be getting marketed. You should be finding opportunities. But I mean, you saw with a PIP, someone like Max Homer plays really well in a 2 year span and he doesn't even feature on the PIP. And then only at the end, it took time to like market and see and did it. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh, now he's going to get some of that money because he's famous.
But I mean, to be honest with you, I call a little bit not on what you said there, but so look at Joel Daylen, eh? They call him the people's player. Look how popular he has become. I mean, his life changed after the Netflix series. And not because he's a good player at the moment, because he actually had a far more brutal year than even the year before that. I mean, this guy is literally almost nowhere on the golf course.
He's a great player. That's a bit mean. Joel's a great player, but I know what you're saying. He's not ranked top 30. He's not top 40. He just has a marketing presence. He's built this sort of storyline around himself. He's an awesome guy. Like, all that stuff is true. But there's a point. You take someone who's 70th or 80th, hey, they're interesting, they're fun, there's something cool there, market them. Don't just sit on your butts and go, oh, the top 20 guys will just bring in our money and we're good.
But they also forgot about the everyday golfer that's watching these tours. That's us, you know. And to us, you know, when I see the top guys, it gets a little bit for me. You know, I want to see the underdogs coming through and making.
Or just someone with a different storyline, right?
Or just someone with a different storyline.
You know, someone like Aaron Rye. Do you know anything
somebody
about Aaron Rye?
Sponsored by TaylorMade, to be honest with you.
Aaron Rye, British player. I played with him on Challenge Tour. The quietest guy you'll ever meet. The nicest guy you'll ever meet. Made it all the way from small town in the UK to playing on the PGA Tour, and he's kicking guys' butts. He wears two gloves. He's got iron covers. Like, that's so random, but that's a storyline you can tell. There are millions of people out there that would vibe with that story and go, wow, this is my guy. Like, I'm not a Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth guy. I'm a Aaron Rye guy who has iron covers and two gloves. Like, this is my dude, and I'm going to root him on when he finishes top 60 at the end of the FedEx Cup year. Like, that's my guy. So, I don't know. There's just so much that goes into the business. It's obviously not easy. It's a big business. It's difficult. And Jay has had a tough job the last 2-3 years. But I don't know. It's just, it's kind of just the perpetual story of the wealthy getting wealthier, people setting the plan and doing everything for their own benefits. And I don't know. If I was in the same place, sure, I would want more money and I would feel like I need to be paid the right amount. But when you set your goals and your mission statement to showcase the top golfers in the world and you leave it ambiguous like that, I mean, that could only be 10 people. That's what the PGA Tour's motto is. And if it's only 20 people, cool, we just have to run with that, and it sucks for us.
Well, it leads me a little bit into, you know, and it's something I want to really dive into it with you, and I'm going to put you on the spot, but Dylan, I also know that that's your comfort zone. But the so I'll go into the European Tour now, but I wanted to just speak, so Keegan Bradley. He's 36. You 32 now?
No, Keegan Bradley's older than that.
No, he's 37. Sorry, my apologies. Okay. He's now 37. And then Brian Harman is also 36 at the moment. But those guys, just hear me out, and maybe I'm basing it little, making it too basic. But he should have been selected for the Ryder Cup, in my opinion, not Justin Thomas. But then I saw that he's in such a circle, Justin Thomas. Does it come down to be a little bit more political? Because on merit, I don't think the best Ryder Cup team was chosen. Keegan Bradley, on paper and on merit, he was ranked 7th, which the top 6 get automatically chosen on merit.
And so he didn't get in. I didn't even know that.
And he didn't get in. So Justin Thomas, you know, and if you look at Justin Thomas' relationship with the captain of the Ryder Cup,
Zach Johnson,
Zach Johnson, it feels like it was a little bit friendly conversations instead of on merit.
I saw a couple of clips from that Full Swing show, and it's a locker room. That's what you're friends with those guys. That's how it goes. But it just speaks to what I said earlier about the whole organization kind of only caring about certain people. And the craziest thing for me is just, and we're going to see it now when the stuff comes out about how this money is going to be divided up with the new injection, venture capital, all those guys, and then 15% of the money going to the players. we've got our emails, we've seen how that money's going to be divided, but there's no printout now of who those players are getting what. There's going to be a bunch dividing X amount, getting 20 mil. There's going to be a bunch dividing, getting, I think it's like 1.5 mil, and a bunch getting 500,000. So value of current stock allocation. And when I looked at it, I'm like, okay, they've just handpicked this. They just sort of back-ended it from what it seems like. We need to pay these guys, find a framework, find something that gets these guys the money. There it is.
Yeah.
But you can hide behind that in corporate business, because you just say, here's our general ambiguous statement, theory, framework, get someone to third party, okay, yeah, cool, it fits, here we go. So I think there's going to be a big storm once that happens and people work out how much they're getting and who is ranked higher than other guys, because you've performed okay for 5 years, you've performed really well for 1 year. Do either of those guys get money? We don't know. We'll find out once everything settles.
So potentially the soapy continues.
Oh, the soapy's going to continue for another 3-4 years. There's always going to be drama. And I think both sides, Liv and PGA Tour, want that. I mean, yeah. You want some excitement. You want stuff to be talked about.
Yeah.
And I just, at the end of the day, sure, more eyeballs is better, but guys are going to get tired of drama, I think, eventually. That's my theory, at least. If your product is not engaging and your product is not great, you can't hide behind drama all the time.
Yeah, and I think for amateurs as well, we get to a point where just show some good golf. But I will tell you, it's the same of what you said there now. There's a massive discussion between amateurs, like, who gets TV time on the PGA Tour, you know? For us, it becomes a little bit repetitive. You know, I certainly can tell you now that I'm switching off a lot more out of the PGA, and it's not because I don't enjoy the golf. I mean, I love it. But the same people, and I have to see the same shots, and I'm a little bit over it.
Yeah.
Show me the guys that are building from the bottom down.
Yeah.
You know, trying to make the cut. Make it a bit exciting, because to us, it's relatable also a lot more.
Yeah,
100%. I totally agree. I mean...
Do you guys watch golf? I don't, to be honest, I don't watch golf. If it's a major and I'm not playing, I might, but honestly find the coverage pretty boring on the PGA Tour.
The PGA Tour, I only turn on the screens if I've got my friends playing.
Yeah.
You or Eric playing.
It's the same for me.
Then, you know, I'll either look at my app, follow it through the app, and try watch the PGA Tour, but I hardly see you guys on TV anyway. It's like you literally have to be in the top five, top 10 to actually get a couple of shots on screen time. Which is frustrating, because, I mean, yes, the PGA Tour is an American tour, but you have millions of viewers all around the world watching and want to see their people. And you're seeing Rory, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler. I mean, the guys are amazing, but it's not just about them for me at the end of the day, right? And going back to guys like scraping to make the cut, you know...
Well, guys that are on a medical extension, tell that story. Hey, he's got two tournaments to make, 100,000 or... 300 points, and like they never do that. But 100%. There's so many other stories you can tell. But I feel like the guys are just,
I mean,
lazy.
If you look at the Live Golf when they were starting to finish their season, and they, I think they had to finish top 50 or 40 to secure their card. And Scott Vincent, which we know, he was on that bubble, and they showed his last,
really,
let's call it 36 holes, and literally featured him for the tournament.
Yeah, he's the bubble guy.
He was on the bubble guy, and then he was just out. Then he was just in.
Yeah.
That's exciting to watch.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a friend of ours.
Yeah.
We played golf with him, but that's exciting.
It's another angle,
It's another angle to watch.
Yeah.
Do you watch Liv?
I've watched a little bit. I've watched enough to see what the production's about and how it goes. I've got a lot of friends that play over there, obviously. And it's a cool production. I like the way they do it. I think the colors and the schemes and all that is really good, but the format, I'm not totally behind the team stuff, I think, is good, but then the shotgun start and that kind of busyness, I honestly get tired watching it. Like, there's so much to keep track of that, like, it's like playing a video game. If it's that intense, you're gonna get tired, you're gonna feel like, ugh.
Yeah,
my free time, I don't want to be mentally drained. I try and stay away from that.
I'm also like that, like, I'm involved with golf every single day, like my weekends, like playing a round of 18 on a Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah,
it's just too much golf for a week for me. You know what I'm saying?
So that's why pickleball. I watch some pickleball. It's nice, fun. It's lighthearted. It's intense at times, but it's easy viewing. I don't want to be sitting there trying to work out how many shots does this team need to make up and how many holes and how many. It just gets a little confusing and much for me.
But I mean, this what you guys just said there just shows us they have to mix it up a little.
Yeah.
They have to find a way to get guys to make it interesting to watch again.
I think also on that point, what do you think of these feature tournaments where it's minimal field, 50 cut line, Because
it's a tricky one.
It's controversial because they're protecting the top players. And let's call it the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
I want to call the bottom feeders get left out again, you know, which it used to be.
I mean, we can talk about Eric Van Rooyen, our buddy.
I
called our physio and I was like, hey, what's it? What's the schedule? And he goes, oh, he was only in those first two or three elevated events. I'm like, what do you mean? He won. He's in the winner's category now.
No,
he only gets those two or three after that. And I thought, if you win, you get in the rest of the season. And he was like, no.
He only got into Arnold Palmer because of his second finish. He wasn't supposed to play.
Yeah.
It wasn't part of a schedule, and then he obviously decided to play, which is quite tricky.
It's a never-ending conversation.
He's top 20 on the FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
How you can't get in a field when you're top 20.
How is that possible?
Yeah. It's just the criteria. It's the way they structure it. You're never going to win with entries on any tour. There's always going to be someone left out. So you just want to do it in the most fair way possible. But to answer your question, I think there is a place for limited field events, 100%. The tour has always had limited field events. You had WGCs, you had invitationals. But where do you draw that limit? Is it 50 players? Is it 120 players? For me, in a perfect world, I would see four or five totally limited field, 50 players. Pick your biggest events. You have 50 players, no cut. They go and play, make it a big event. Besides that, you should have at least 120 guys in the field and you should have a cut. I mean, I just played the Johnson Workwear tournament this week, DP Tour, Sunshine Tour event. I had to grind my ass off to make the cut. Mm. I was one under, cut line was going to be four or five under, and I had like 10 holes to go. Mm. I had to fight. I had to make birdies. I had to focus. I told my caddy on the final day, I said, do you think we would have worked as hard if it was a no-cut event? And he was like, hell no. Like he said, you probably would have been 14 under because you wouldn't have felt any pressure early on. But that's the way the game's been played for the longest time. And
correct.
I don't know. You can also add the conversation of, they've had problems in tennis with guys not trying hard enough and tanking, and just now the betting guys are going, hang on, this guy didn't try. How's that a fair reflection of the match? And we've put the odds at this. And I guess golf betting is coming and it's getting bigger. Same thing. If you have a limited field event, that guy in 35th place who's made $5 million already this year, why is he even going to try?
Yeah.
And I don't see how that conversation can be had with the betting guys and say this is a true reflection of guys trying their best and trying to move up the leaderboard. Like, guy's got 5-10 mil in the bank, he's not going to try hard.
No.
And that Arnold Palmer's a brutal golf course. I mean,
it's a brutal one, yeah. But now, just tell me on that, now that you've played, you've just mentioned the DP Tour at Glendower. Honestly, from a critical perspective, how do you compare those events with something that you are used to more in the States?
Specifically the co-sanctioned Sunshine Tour,
and
DP Tour.
Yeah, versus European Tour.
Like, I mean,
So in general, the ones in the Middle East, which are full field DP Tour events, they were run really well. Dubai Desert Classic was probably in the top five tournaments I've ever played.
Okay.
The food, the organization, the golf course, everything, I would say, better than the PGA Tour.
Okay.
A PGA Tour average tournament. It would reflect similarly to a, like a Memorial or a Bay Hill or one of those invitationals for sure. And then you've got other Ras Al Khaimah, Bahrain, where I won. Those tournaments are just as good, well structured, not as many fans. Obviously, it's hard to get people out in the Middle East. The game's not as big as it should be, but it's run really well. I think on average, what I said to a lot of the organizers and the players on the DP Tour, the tour in America has so much money, they can do amazing work.
Yeah.
But they don't. They do maybe this much. DP Tour has this much money, and they get so much more value out of the product, and they work really hard to, because they've got to get their money. They've got to work hard. Hey, we don't have a sponsor this week. We've got to put some money in. We've got to find guys. PGA Tour goes, oh, the sponsor's acting up right now. Yeah, we don't need them. If you guys, fine. If you don't want a sponsor, that's cool. Who's next up next? We got another one.
Yeah.
So that sort of hunger and that fight to provide a good product is way higher on the DP Tour than it is on the PGA Tour.
And where would you say South African, so a young South African in South Africa, I mean, what did they have in their mind? Is it PGA Tour or European Tour? And where would you see the biggest benefit for somebody to go to?
I don't know. I mean, I try and mentor some of the young guys that come out on tour, but for me, it's just you got to play where you can play. I had status on the Challenge Tour and the Sunshine Tour when I first turned pro. Got to play there. And once you're thrown into that arena, you got to find your way to get into the top 5%. Once you're in that top 5%, then opportunities come up somewhere else. So if you're Christian Maas, someone that's trying to play the NCAA system and get a ranking there to play on the PGA Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour, hey, bro, you need to focus on America.
Okay.
Don't think about Europe or South Africa. But if you're a South African 18, 19, and you've won all the amateur events, and you're like, I don't know what to do, your next link is going to be co-sanctioned Sunshine European, so that should be your thought. But lifestyle comes into it as well. I've just chased where I could play and just moved up the rankings wherever I could. Other guys might have a different view on life. Hey, I want to be comfortable. I want to live in South Africa, have a family.
Yeah.
Then you got to think about it. Maybe Sunshine Tour is all you want to do and try and get into DP. But yeah, for me, golf is a career and it's money and it's opportunities and it's my passion. So I'm going to just play wherever I can to be the best I can and have the best competition.
If you had to go to your event that you won, did you feel like something was there for you to win? What was it like to be in that like winning position again, leading? I'm sure you haven't been there in a while, so
yeah.
Was it like a whole different experience and how you handled that?
It was, but it was, I mean, it's still golf. It was kind of frustrating. Dubai, I played well. I can't remember where I finished, 30th, 40th. Ras Al Khaimah, I played well, and I finished 55th. The scoring was so low that I was like, I'm like 12 under or 10 under, whatever I am, and I'm 50-something. Like, this is crazy. So I knew I was playing well, and then I got to Bahrain. The conditions were a bit more difficult. We had some wind. It was firmer, long rough. So I'm like, okay, this course kind of favors me. And got my head down, second round, played really well. And I looked up, and I'm like, oh, cool, I'm around the lead. Like, that's the goal always, is to be around the lead early on.
Yeah.
Once you get close to the lead, it's easy to stay there. But when you're 5 shots off the lead, or 6 shots, or 4 shots, in golf, we kind of press. You're kind of trying to push things, and that often doesn't lead to good play. But yeah, if you're up there, it's easy to stay there. And I kept telling myself, especially on Sunday, as long as I can be near the lead with a few holes to go, I know I'm going to win this. I'm going to do well.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got, I use the phrase kill ratio, like you think of a predator or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Statistically, someone can do the research. I feel like I have a really good kill ratio when it comes to winning tournaments or finishing high up. If I'm in contention, I feel like my stress response and my way of calming myself down and playing well under pressure is very good. So thankfully that worked out well in Bahrain. I was 2-3 shots behind with like 8, 9, 10 holes to go. And it's like, just be there with 3 or 4 holes to go, and that's what happened. Birdie 2 holes on the back nine, 14 and 15, the par fives.
Putts on 16 and 17.
13 and 14. That putt was huge. That kind of sealed it. But yeah, before that, the back-to-back par fives, those two birdies, once I got them, I'm like, okay, now I'm 1 shot back. Here we go. Let's see what happens. I know 4 holes to go. I can shoot one under, but these other guys with less experience than me and way more stressed, first-time winners, they're going to be scared. And I, yeah, thankfully I managed to execute and go one under the last four.
So you followed the leaderboard the whole day?
No, I stayed away from it the first nine, but then when I made the turn, it's like, okay, now I need to know. Yeah. Guys ahead, we'd played poorly in the final group, so I needed to know what the guys ahead were doing. Someone could be 7 under through 12, and now we're 3 back or 4 back, but thankfully our group was still at the top.
Sure, well, I'm glad you spoke about that, because I want to now go into yourself a little bit, very personal. And I suppose a little bit emotional as well. But Keegan Brady and Brian Harman, there is about 4 or 5 years, depending on who you talk about, difference between the two of you. You've been at number 44 in the world before.
Yeah.
What is your ambition going forward? Have you got an ambition to get back to that position? And I also, these guys show clearly that you are still young in golf terminology.
Yeah.
You're still a very young man.
Yeah.
You can still do it. There's Oaks that are performing at a high rate, you know, 8 years older than you are.
Yeah.
But what's your own goal and ambition there for you? And you know, we're looking from the side. It's difficult for us to see what's that path for Dylan.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to see it sometimes. Last year, I made enough money to chill and relax the rest of my life. That's one box that I ticked probably 2-3 years ago. And I'm smart with my money. I don't waste a lot, and I don't have goals of owning 10 houses and a boat and a car or whatever. So,
and still fly economy.
Yeah, and I still fly economy most of the time. So, when it comes to that box, it's ticked. So now it's like, what are my other motivating factors? I need to find that. Honestly, there are not many out there besides lifestyle and traveling. And that's why it's been a nice blessing coming back to the DP World Tour. It's like, oh, Asia, go and play in China, Japan, go visit these places, Middle East, Europe. I'm really looking forward to Europe this summer.
Okay.
To go there and do some cultural things, go to museums, go to these 300, 400, 500-year-old cities and experience some culture again. I mean, the PJ Tour is great because it's easy and it's straightforward and travel is great. But hey, sometimes it's nice to just wander outside of your hotel and walk around and see some cool things.
Yeah.
So that's a motivating factor for me right now, just playing the schedule. And my uncle was really crucial in helping me see that. After I won Bahrain, I'm like looking at my schedule and I'm telling him, like, oh, skip this one, play this one, and then world ranking and majors. And he's like, Dale, just stop. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, well, I'm trying to plan this to do it the best way and most efficient. He said, you ran into this problem last year. Why are you trying to chase? Why are you trying to do all this? Pick the schedule, see where you want to play, which tournaments you enjoy. Go enjoy the experience. You've got a 2-year exemption now. Just have fun. Don't. And I was like, you're right. Yeah. I just get in that mindset of being so analytical and so focused, and so many of us do that. And golfers, after 10, 15 years, they pick their head up and they're like, I'm losing my status. I've never experienced any of these tournaments. I've never experienced any of these cities. I've just gone there to play golf and do my job.
That's a fair point.
And it's a tough switch to make, because you feel like as soon as you make that and it's now not about the golf exactly, oh no, my performance might go down, or I won't be as focused. So I've found that I've maybe played better by switching that mindset, but it's a tough balance to figure out. And I think the young kids, I'd like to think the young kids have a better perspective on that now, but I do see other guys that are also just so focused, don't want to pick their head up and look around and enjoy it.
If you look at some tour players, I mean, let's say they go from Australia to Japan to Europe and stuff like that, they literally go golf course, hotel room, where you've got the world outside your door.
Yeah.
You know, different things. Let's call it a Ferrari world or Disney world.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
You know,
architecture tour, whatever.
Yeah, or history. You get so stuck up with routine that you forget to actually live.
Yeah.
In essence, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's a valid point. I mean, you live more, you enjoy more, you actually start responding to enjoying the game and enjoying where you are.
Yeah.
You know, if you're stuck on the golf course in a hotel room, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes. So
I mean, Arthur's played the game at a high level, so he knows what that's like. He's been through it, but so many fans and people just don't understand it. Yeah, they're like, yeah, but you're still traveling and you're still playing golf. It's like, if I told you to go and suntan an hour a day, sit on the beach and do your favorite activity, do that 35, 40 days in a row, you're going to get tired of that eventually, unless you have other things to keep you busy or ways to change your mind and different surroundings. It's going to get boring.
No, I agree with you. Even in general life. Yeah. Eventually, you would go to places and you'd come back and you're like, oh, I was in such a nice place. I wish I looked up. But you go for dinner, and I suppose that's a good message for all of us, because I personally think that I've seen many CEOs and many successful people, whether it's in sports or business. Some of them can literally halfway through the day go and just go to the driving range for 40 minutes or take a break in the afternoon for something. But they're actually more productive in what they do. So I think it is a balance you need to find. And it's good that people like you speak out to say, listen, while you're in that journey, and you know, not only at 32 years old, you go, shit, let me live a little bit. Try and enjoy it while you're there at the same time. Because it's that serious mode, you know.
Yeah.
If I'm now going to go and enjoy something, I'm not going to be focused. And I think that's actually because our minds are made that.
No, it's a scale. It's a scale. You can't be that guy that just, oh, I'm going to travel the world and do nothing. And
correct.
You're going to get bored of that. Early on, maybe 7 years ago, there's a study that asked like the elderly, what is the one thing in your life that sort of gives you meaning, purpose, happiness, and they kind of boiled it down to a pursuit of being the best in whatever it is. That's one thing that is like a defining factor in someone having a positive life or a good life. And I've always thought, okay, yeah, that's golf for me. That's me focused, working hard, doing that stuff. But then the other studies that'll say, oh, having a partner, like having a life partner, that's a huge one in mortality rates. Once you lose that partner or you don't have it, your lifespan comes down. So there's many different scientific things that you can figure out. But if you not focus on all of those things, if you just understand what those triggers are and what those levers are, you can pull on them at certain times.
Yeah.
You become lonely, family, friends, let's tag into that. Oh, you become complacent, professional, focus, work, get your mind going again. So there's many different aspects that you need to toggle between to have a happy, successful existence.
Well, and it leads me on to my next one. And I'm asking and putting you on the spot on these things. But if you look at, we didn't go into it much, Nate.
Yeah.
So your Masters and the Open Championship that you played, you came fifth in both.
Yeah. I think it was fourth at one of them.
Fourth in the Open and fifth in the Masters.
Yeah.
It's factual, bro. You can't say Keegan Bradley is 36 when he's 40.
Yeah.
Example.
I'm not going to go there, but I think he's older than 36.
Okay, get your
phone. I think he might be 37 then. So, but you did that. That was in 2020, eh?
Yeah.
So you, and it's just from an outside perspective, you're more mature. You fit.
Yeah.
It's not like you were less fit back then or more fit back then. Am I right? I mean, you're a fit guy. You take life seriously. You're very motivated. You've got incredible discipline. That's very obvious from everything that you are. But why do you think you can't do that right now?
I can.
You can.
And
you can throw me into a major. I can finish fifth right now. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind.
But just talk us a little bit into that. I mean, why are you not there at the moment?
It's golf. It's the game is so difficult that last year I couldn't see myself hitting a fairway at times.
Yeah.
This year I go and play. I'm like, okay,
done.
320 over that bunker. I'm going to send it. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the mental, the physical, the technical. It's all that stuff intertwined. And it's such a difficult sport that you can't be on it all the time. I mean, Scotty Scheffler, I saw he won by 5 shots yesterday. I didn't even look at any leaderboards, but he was clearly on in every aspect of his game.
Yes.
So for him to do that, he's going to win every tournament he plays in. For me to be on my game, depending on the arena, if it's a major, me on my game might be a fifth place. But in a DP Tour event, it's a win. In a Sunshine Tour event, it's a win by 5 maybe. Yeah. So whatever arena you're in, you got to play well enough and you got to be on in all those aspects. And if you're not taking care of it, if you're not on your diet, you're not practicing, you're not working with your coach, you're gonna
mentally
slowly gonna erode those high levels of performance to where your peak is 50% of what it used to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I had last year. I eroded my performance and now I have to build it back up.
I suppose Ricky Fowler went through that too.
Everyone's gone through. There's been nobody that hasn't, as a golfer.
You can look at Erik van Rooy and he almost lost his card.
Yeah.
Again, also similar to Dylan, had battled with injuries. I think he battled a lot longer than you.
Yeah.
2-3 years. It happens.
Just shows you the toughness of the game.
It's just ridiculous. And I think everyone needs to go through it to get where they need to be.
Yeah, if you want to get stronger. I mean, there's some people that don't really go to the depths that others do, but you're never going to just stay in a top 20, top 30 situation on any tour and any world ranking in any...
Manasera.
Yeah.
One now, yesterday. First event in 10 years, and he is a really good player. And at a very young age as well.
Yeah.
So, it's a game.
Yeah, it's a tough game. There's no dominance. There's no dominance at the moment.
Yeah.
Nobody is dominating the game.
Well, Scotty to an extent.
Yeah.
But he's dominating. I mean, every commentator, every playing commentator, like if he misses the fairway on the right side of the fairway, that's a miss for him. Like, he's really good at the moment. Is he Tiger Woods? Not yet, but he is dominating.
Yeah.
He's flipping good. And I think he's going to stay there for a while, I suppose. Until he hits his dips and injuries and he might...
Hopefully he stays away.
He might break an ankle with his footwork a little bit, but let's have a look what happens. Do you think with... I know you went through a phase where you were searching for club head speed, distance, and do you think that's related to your hip injury?
No.
In a sense, or not?
No, not at all. It was in the gym. I know exactly when I felt it. I was doing an RDL, heavy 150, 160 pound RDL, and felt a little tweak, and it was strange. It just migrated around. It was like left hip, lower back, right hip, just weird little, basically my hips were just totally out, and then my spine got some pressure. I've always had a lordosis in the lower back here, the sort of arched back, and I know that's an issue for me, so I was trying to correct that in the gym and work on it, but I should have taken time off.
Mm.
Guys, you hear guys all the time, they kind of just using the system, injury, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't think I'm injured. Like, I'm still physically strong. I can jump, I can do a back squat, I can do this stuff, so I'm not injured. But little things in there that all of a sudden, now you feel that little lightning, that little, like, I got out of the car a few times and I was just standing there like, literally bowled over like this and I couldn't walk. So it's like, that should have been my trigger. Hey, Dol, take time off, go see a physio, get it done. And I didn't. I should have really just focused on that. But I've learned from that now, and hopefully I don't have to go through it in the future, but I'm sure there will be similar issues at some point if I play for long enough.
Well, I didn't mean to push you on that, but I mean, you're such a disciplined guy. Somebody going through that moment at the moment where there's a bit of injury, what do they do in that situation? I mean, you're such a confident guy. How did you not make that call?
Well, I had Nick Catterall, my old physio and trainer, leave with Liv and go with Cam Smith's team. So I had 4 years on the PGA Tour of a full-time physio. He lived in Austin. We trained together.
Sometimes it's as simple as that, man.
I thought, I'll be fine. I don't need a full-time physio. I'll be able to take care of it and use the odd physio and the tour physios. But I think that structure, just having a guy there to say, hey, something's wrong, let's figure this out, and killing it right away, just getting it done, that was the issue. And thankfully I found a really good friend of mine, Aki Tajima, who worked for Austin FC. I always used to try and see him in that year period outside of golf, and he was so busy with the soccer team that he couldn't see me. And then eventually he's like, okay, I'm done with soccer, and I plead, please come and help me, like, I need help. And he's like, okay, let's work on this. He was at a time as well where he just wanted to simplify things in his life, and introduced him to Eric van Rooyen as well. And Eric, you said a few injuries and things he's been trying to take care of, and now Aki's traveling the PGA Tour. He's got four or five players. So I introduced him on that road, and he really, he was the one that pretty much pieced it together and puzzled it out. And I sadly can't see him all that often now because I'm playing in Europe and he's in America. So, but I'm going to get back to the States. It's just a matter of being there. And when that happens, hopefully he's still willing to travel the tour and work with me. But yeah, if you're an injured individual, go see a professional. Find, figure it out. Sad thing is, we're at the top level and we get the best care. Guys that are like on the cutting edge, it's tough for a normal person. Even if you're in a city like Houston with great medical, Johannesburg, wherever, it's tough to find guys that know those finer movement patterns and things that can help you. But there are definitely people out there for general issues that can get you on the right track. And don't be afraid to spend money. Like, if you have money, spend it. Your health and everything is worth way more than just, I know I can't afford it.
Yeah. Well, just on that, I just want some PGA insights if you don't mind.
Yeah.
But one thing that I must be honest, I mean, I've obviously loved golf. We understand the Masters, the Majors, the Open Championships. But I must be honest, this time it hit me really hard how much players dedicate and focus around that. And all the PGA Tours events in between is almost like practice. And hear me out, you'll be able to now give us a look. But they really focus on the four major tournaments for the year.
Yeah.
And then the Ryder Cup seems to be a massive, the fifth sort of one that everybody wants to play in.
Yeah. Scheduling, so is that your question? Like,
no, it's just, is that in fact still the case? Is that what everybody still chases?
And I don't know. Clearly not, because guys have gone to live and they've said, I don't care about the majors because there was no clear path to getting in there. I mean, money has to be the number one motivators for guys. Anyone that goes into pro golf, like, why are you going into pro golf? You can be a member at the club and play club champs and play at a high level.
Yeah.
But if you're going into pro golf, you're trying to earn a living. That's the bottom line. So the majors are huge and they're fun and they're awesome, but honestly, I've got to go to a US Open qualifier this year, and it's either in Dallas or it's in London, and I'm playing in Belgium the next week. Not the next week, the same week, because it's on a Monday. And for the first time in my career, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to sign up for the US Open. It just doesn't make sense. And then in the middle of the season, I'm going to have to jump back from Europe to go to Pinehurst and then come back. Like, scheduling doesn't make sense, so my mind, I've played in two US Opens, I've played in 13, 14 majors, whatever it is. They're great, they're awesome, but only once you're in them consistently and you know before the season starts that you're in them, are they helpful or are they a goal?
Yeah.
I had that fortune of knowing I was in two or three for about a 5-year period and I could plan around that, but now it's like, you know what, it's not worth it. Majors are fun and they're cool, but it's a lot of hard work. It takes a lot out of you.
I think the crucial thing there that's you just mentioned is you're going to keep it simple.
Yeah.
Go back to the basics, stick to the tour, go dominate the tour you're on right now, and that's all going to snowball into being where you need to be again.
Yeah.
Simple.
No, that's it.
So I don't want it to sound like it's too plain, but people love behind the scenes. How does it work with lockers and parking?
PGA Tour, you drive up, maybe 20% of the tournaments, hey, you have a name on a parking spot, so that's yours, but the rest of the time you just pull into any parking, locker rooms, any old locker room in the clubhouse. You have your name on the locker. It's 95% of the time PGA Tour, it's alphabetical.
Okay.
So you're always going to be around the same guys.
Okay,
so Sergio,
alphabetical. Okay.
Sergio was a locker mate for a long time, so him being in Austin, that was cool. Some guys might have issues with the guys around them if their last name doesn't line up, but PGA Tour locker rooms are a lot of fun, I'll say that. Like, that's where the guys finally, like, let down their hair and relax and talk about stuff. But even in the dining area, their wives are around, their people are around, so, like, conversation can be a bit guarded. Gotcha. So, yeah, locker rooms are fun. European Tour, obviously less glamorous. We have usually shuttles to the golf course, less cars. Okay. We don't get given cars. So, there it's more, the dining area is more fun because you've got different cultures, different countries, people mixing and hanging out. Yeah, I don't know. Any locker room is going to be fun. It's just you go back to childhood and playing sport and guys messing around.
Is it table tennis tables?
Sometimes in America. European Tour, I haven't seen too many sort of fun games and things going on, but I think some of the Spanish guys maybe play cards or some kind of games every now and then. You also have a lot of delays on the European DP Tour because of rain, lightning. There you have to come up with ways to kill time.
Yes.
PGA Tour, a lot better weather, so you're not having too many weather delays.
Yes.
But yeah, does that answer your question?
It does. And then how does it also work on payments and stuff? So let's say you do win something on the European Tour, American Tour. I mean, how does it come through? Is it like a WhatsApp or SMS that says you've been paid?
Yeah, there's a statement, just like any old job.
Okay.
You'll get an email. I had an issue with the DP Tour accounting because obviously they had my old bank accounts from 6-7 years ago. New one in the States, hey, pay me in dollars, send it over there. And I just, hey guys, I haven't seen this payment. Luckily, it wasn't my payment from Bahrain, which was $400,000. It was a smaller one. And I said, where's this payment, guys? It hasn't come through. No, we sent it. And then they look, oh, we sent it to your Euro account.
Please tell me that.
From blah, blah. It came.
Okay.
But I designated the US account to my payment. Okay. So they're like, it's our fault. Sorry. So had to figure that out. But that happens in any old business.
Okay.
Stuff falls through the cracks. But yeah, it's just a payment, direct transfer. You choose what currency, whatever it's quoted in.
5 days, 7 days after the
tournament. I think European Tour, you get paid the Tuesday the following week. So,
So about
plus 9 days from the end of the tournament. PGA Tour is quicker, I believe. I think it was midweek the week after, as long as they had the money in their account. I think DP Tour, every now and then, like back in the day, this was 6-7 years ago, there were sometimes issues, like in South Africa, with foreign exchange rates and stuff, like there are agreements in place that they lock in a rate, or it can be tricky to get the money in the account before they pay it. So, and if you're not heavily liquid as a tour,
you don't have
the money, you can't pay. So sometimes you have to wait for money, but I think the DP Tour has figured that all out now. There's no issues.
And then just a quick status update. I don't want to keep us too long. I know you guys got to get competitive.
I've got to start warming up now. Yeah.
But the lift tour at PJ. Where are we with the merger? Because it's unclear.
We are nowhere.
Right when we say this, we don't know what the hell's going on.
This might be a hot take, and I don't know if PJ Tour might edit this out if we ask them, but I don't think there are any goals for either party, really, on both sides, to come together and form anything. It's just the egos are too big, the plans are too far apart. I don't see a merging of any kind happening. I think it was just a stopgap, as they say in America. It's just something to tick the box, and we appeared in Congress, and we've ticked all the boxes now. You got to understand, two massive corporations, they want their best interests to be at the fore, and they want to dominate the space. So Jay's doing his thing, Liv and the guys there are doing their thing. I don't think there's any goals for them to come together. And then the DP Tour is sitting in the middle there like, what's going on, guys? We don't know. They don't have any sort of skin in the game, so they can't do too much. But I don't think we're going to see any kind of merging for the next 2 years. I think it's going to take time. Guys are talking about it now, obviously. Oh, is this, are we going to let guys back in on the PGA Tour? How's it going to work out? Eventually, they'll have to do something because maybe the ratings are dipping. There's not that much interest, and now they need to drum up some more excitement or drama. But on the business side, I think the PGA Tour has got what they wanted. They've got a valuation now, multiple billions of dollars valuation. They look at Liv and they say, if we're doing a true merger here along business terms, where's your value? What do you have?
Yeah.
They say, oh no, we're multi-billion. You can't prove that. You don't have investors. You don't have the money behind you. You've just got a fund that you're drawing money from. So I think that was the PGA Tour's play to just kind of blow them out of the water with this huge valuation. Liv, what's your valuation? We need to merge on terms. You guys are not going to get a big piece of the pie. I think that's their goal. So
I feel like Rory's trending towards Liv at the moment, the way he's handled everything. Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't.
You do. Feeling.
There's rumors he's going.
You know me. I've never been one for locker room talk or theories or anything. I like some conspiracy theories when it comes to like espionage and governments and business. But in my own game, it's a lot simpler than people. You can write stories and stuff. Guys, free to change his mind. If Rory wants to go play on Liv, he can go play on Liv. Like, he has that right. He has that ability. But when you look at his balance sheet, I don't think it'll ever happen. When his sponsors are corporate America, sort of Northeast bankers, finance, that's his frame of reference. That's who he hangs out with. Those are the people that he knows. So for him to turn his back on those guys would be pretty silly. Unless those guys are also in the Liv landscape and he still has buddies there, then he'll do it. But bottom line, he's not going to forsake hundreds of millions of dollars to go and play somewhere else. I don't see that happening.
Unless the oil money comes involved.
Even if the money's there, he's burning relationships. He's burning friends. He's burning, I mean, he has kids, like children are going to grow up and he wants an environment for them to grow up in. I don't see him making that decision. There's a lot more to it than just money and schedule for a guy like that. For me, it's kind of simple. It's money, schedule, where I'm going to play. But for him, it's all his friends, his frame of reference, his media profile. So it's a lot more difficult.
Let's see how this picture gets painted.
And the bigger thing would be is him pushing the agenda and trying to get those friends of his to merge with Liv to create something else. He has the power to do something, as we've seen.
Yeah.
He's been in all these talks. He's been at the table. Now he's sort of taken a step back, but he still has a lot of power.
So listen, you came from injury. You had a tough 18 months. You recovered exceptionally well from that. And not just recovered in the top two, you went and won a championship. Dylan, give us the next 12 month. What can we expect from you? What can we follow for you? And what's your plans? You touched on it slightly.
Yeah.
Just give us the next 12 months.
First thing is I've got 5 weeks off, which I'm so looking forward to.
Right now.
This is the longest break I've had since COVID probably. Apparently I'm going to play with animals and relax. They're coming to hang out with me, but pickleball, hang out, get some sun, maybe some wake surfing, lake time, and then training. I mean, I'll be in the gym and I'll be working, getting stronger, but I've told myself since my first year of the PGA Tour, I played way too much. Take a break before the summer, and I've never done it. So this is my time now, having won, take a break, play the European summer. I'll go to Japan and China, play there sort of to start the summer, and then I'm just excited. Belgium, France, Germany, the UK, Czech Republic, like all these cool tournaments that I played either on the Challenge Tour or the European Tour back in the day. Now I'm going to get to go back there and see these cities and travel, and it's just going to be a fun summer with, I don't know, some travel, some excitement, and then hopefully some good golf too.
Well, it's really exciting to see. I can see that you're passionate about that. And Dylan, we wish you all the best on this next 12 months and this journey. And thank you for sitting down. Thank you for coming to play in South Africa again. We always say it, but we are just grateful to see somebody like you. And, you know, I had a mate of mine yesterday when I was there telling him I've got Dylan coming up. You've still got so many people that look up to you. Thank you for being an inspiration.
Yeah.
And thank you for always being direct with us.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that I can just speak to you so directly about questions.
Yeah.
You are no
with all your information about how old people are when they're about 10 years younger than what they actually are.
Well, I wasn't following.
We can edit that out. Hopefully we don't have to edit out all of the PGA Tour stuff I've said.
Hold back on you, which is great.
Yeah. And the thing is, Dylan, I always want to say from our show, Arthur and I spoke it this morning, we want to see you back in the top 50. And because, not because you need it, not because your ego is there, but because we believe you can do it. You've got the ability to do it. You're young. You've got all the experience now. You've got an incredible mindset. But please go kick some ass in the top 50 for us.
I will. I'll win again before the end of the year. How about that?
I would love that. And we would be following that and we'll hold you. And if he gets into that top 50, what should we do?
Private majors. Plane? Come visit a major. There
a
we
major.
Go.
Major, yes. Okay, if he gets into the top 50, we'll go and fly down to a major.
You started so like, you really wanted him to do well, and then you just took it of you like, I want something out of it.
Yeah, what a moment. Yeah.
Don't worry, he's not the only one. I've got tons of people that want tons of things from me.
You know me, I would never in my life take that advantage.
No, 100%.
But thank you very much for everybody that's watching, and Arthi, thank you very much also for coming in. Enjoy the two of you to have paddle. Sorry, I can't join. But have fun.
I'm actually glad you can't.
No injuries.
You're going to hold us down.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, right. After, you know,
when
Italian,
I got that message this morning, I was like, great, we can actually have a
you know, match. When you say stuff like that, I just want to get my shoes on and kick your bloody ass.
Nah.
You know, well, on that note, I can just might as well just mention this. Did myself and Mornay not kick you and Skogbritz's ass on the golf course about a couple of days ago?
Quick question.
Wow. I'm just asking, handicaps involved. If handicaps are involved,
then we played off the cuff.
Okay.
Off the cuff.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Can you base it off nine holes?
I mean, you can if nine holes is the match, yes.
Thank you, Dylan. I thought we were factual.
We weren't planning for
it. If it was an 18-hole game, then no.
Yes, it wasn't. It was a nine-hole because we played late. Only teed off at half past three. We can only get nine holes.
That's fair. Yeah, it's a win.
That's what they started to say on the ninth. Oh, it's not 18 holes.
Well,
and I'm like...
It's a pleasure for your amazing golf clubs to make you play better golf.
Oh, listen to him now. So I'm just saying, don't be so quick on kicking my ass on any sport because Arthur, right now we won zero.
Okay.
Thank you for everybody and we appreciate it, Dylan. We bless you and thank you very much for your time and enjoy this time off.
Thanks.
And we look forward to looking and watching you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully some good golf's on the horizon.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks, Dylan. Thank you so much.